Chapter 11. Glossitis. Glossitis is inflammation of the tongue, resulting often in the organ becoming swollen and enlarged. In good health, the tongue sits comfortably and neatly inside the lower jaw, actively fulfilling its function, but without obtrusion, instinctively doing its part in the formation of words, recording flavors, assisting mastication. With so much movement, it is a marvel that it is not pinched between the teeth, but it rarely happens. There is, it seems, a built-in system of synchronization, whereby, when the teeth meet, the tongue just escapes. When the tongue is inflamed and swollen, it at once becomes obtrusive. Its true functions are hindered, and movement becomes painful. Because of its enlarged condition, words are malformed, and sensitivity is dulled. Normal diet is restricted, and things once appetizing lose their flavor. The mouth tastes bad. To the physician, often the tongue is a barometer. Its appearance tells him of unseen abnormalities. It is an outward sign of an inward condition. Sometimes it gives insight into deeper and more serious failures. Its condition may signify that other parts of the body are not functioning effectively. It may tell that healthful harmony is disturbed. The tongue, an outlet. This diagnosis is even more true of the soul. According to the Apostle James, the tongue is an unerring sign of spiritual condition. Like mercury, the tongue tells the temperature. As the fever increases, the tongue becomes expansive. Its output is very often the most telling projection of what a man really is. That is why, by our words, we shall be justified or condemned. That is why the unpremeditated activity of the tongue will have to be accounted for in the day of judgment. The absolute nature of the Apostle James' teaching about the tongue is often overlooked. He says it can defile the whole body. Jesus said that the forces which defile come from inside. The tongue is an outlet for internal influences, some of which are tainted with defilement. The things which proceed out of the mouth come forth from the heart. In the list are evil thoughts, murder, false witness, and fornication. At the worst stage of the disease, the possibilities are awful. That is why James is so absolute. The apostle does not beat about the bush. He says emphatically the tongue is a fire. He means that by it the spirit is inflamed. Behold how great a matter a little fire kindleth. In the RV, behold how much wood. James's wood is a forest. A forest fire is a fearful thing, started sometimes by one careless ember, multiplied many times as it spreads. In James's metaphor, a wheel that catches fire as it goes. Think of it on a practical level. Sometimes those who meet together on Sunday and speak of love and fellowship, on Monday change their overcoat and say things that are harsh, unloving, and censorious. As it spreads, the fellowship is fevered and friendships are soured. The ecclesia is harmed, and the cause of the truth is hindered. The smoldering fire runs on, and the innocent are scorched and blistered. The evil of slander. Think of it another way. Very properly, we are instant upon our defense of true doctrine. If words are spoken which question the faith in the cause of truth, the doubtful words are refuted and condemned. But it could be that the tongue which is pure in doctrine is heedless in the manner of another man's character. A cruel word is uttered carelessly. A doubtful insinuation is made irresponsibly. An emphatic silence is entered artfully. A shoulder is shrugged tellingly. The mischief is at work, and a man's reputation is injured. If what is said is half true, then it is also half false. If it is half false, it is wholly wrong. The truth is indivisible, whether about doctrine or disposition. All our fidelity about the faith can be spoiled by our carelessness about calumny. Slander is so difficult to arrest once the wheel has started to turn. James says it is set on fire of hell. He means it is devilish. The first meaning of devil is slanderer. Too often the inflamed tongue magnifies evil and diminishes good. In the final stages, it may result in assassination of some other soul. James urges another point. The inflamed tongue is divinely unnatural. God created this organ so that men could bless and not curse. A fountain is faithful to its source. A tree is obedient to its own law. Both are divinely natural. A sweet fountain does not yield bitter water, neither does a vine bear figs. A tongue blessing God and cursing man is an awful contradiction. Every bubbling fountain and every fruitful tree protests against it. James says it plainly, "My brethren, these things ought not to be." When it happens, it arises out of an unnatural and therefore diseased condition. Cooperation. Soul glossitis is curable, else the human situation would be pitiable. No man by himself can tame the inflamed tongue. The solution is in the wisdom from above. The process of recovery may well begin with a realization of how destructive the disease can be, how barren the landscape can become. As the desert teaches men to love water, so the stunted, graceless, unseasoned condition of the soul drives man to seek that which is wholesome and healthful. The mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life. Proverbs 10, verse 11, RSV. In the New Testament, slander is coupled with idleness, and James's solution is this: let him show by his good life his works in meekness of wisdom. So here is a good start. Get working. Cooperate with those whom previously there had been a temptation to condemn. In the cooperation there is a cleansing. In closer fellowship on a working level, denunciation can give way to devotion. Antipathy is mastered by activity. Malice is ended by ministration. In working together, men tend to share their common failings and are thereby equipped to recognize the common good. Meekness of wisdom teaches us that we tend most easily to recognize in others the faults we are most familiar with in ourselves. It constrains us to urge in defense of our brother's weakness all the arguments we claim in defense of our own. It enforces the truth that those we do not like and those we suspect are also made in the image of God and, being in Christ, are in God's family. It provokes the exhortation not to assault with the tongue the man for whom Christ died. In this way, recovery is surely advanced. Under this humbling discipline, a man at last may come to recognize, with joy, the faithfulness of those he once impeached. It means that instead of deadly poison, there is purity, and instead of restless evil, there is peace. First pure, then peaceable. So, with purified tongue, man may bless God and bless man, made in God's image. Love. Because the inflamed tongue is a symptom of some impurity of the heart, in the end the best cure is love, out of a pure heart and a good conscience and faith unfeigned. Paul says, "Love vaunteth not itself, is not provoked, taketh no account of evil." It will have to be exercised first and most by those who have felt the sting of tongue fire, the truth reverently established, discipline compassionately applied, restoration lovingly made, encouragement faithfully given. This is the blessed antiseptic for the fevered soul. By its therapeutic power, all inflammation can be ended.